So you started off with copper smelting as your first foray into environmental activism. So did you do any other kind of environmental activism before discovering about fracking, or was it kind of no?
Well, yeah.
What?
Well, from the copper plant, there was going to be an asphalt plant.
Oh, I thought she meant before the copper plant.
No, this was after. Because we're starting in 1997,
mm-hmm.
okay? After that was the asphalt plant, and that was defeated.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was our second win. And then they were going to put a rail spur in for Safety Clean, which is a chemical storage facility.
Recycler
that is over here, right next to the copper plant.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to put a rail spur in, and we negotiated with them, and the rail spur did not go in, plus they upgraded their safety and they gave us a tour of the plant. So we said, that's great. And we do not chase these businesses out of town. We just ask them to do a better way of doing things. Then after that, we realized that they were building playgrounds here made out of arsenic treated wood. And that is when, at the same time that was going on, I took the dog for a walk in the park and came home, and my eyes were all red and watery, and we found out they were spraying some very bad chemicals in the park. So at the same time that we were aware that they were using arsenic-treated wood on the playgrounds, they were also spraying these herbicides and pesticides in the park. So we were instrumental in forming the IPM program.
This was in 2001.
That was 16 years ago. And at the same time, we started the campaign against the arsenic playground.
That took a long time.
And that finally went out. We won that, but it was because that wood is phased out because they said it is so cancerous. It causes cancer.
This was an interesting campaign because the wood was phased out in 2004 by the EPA. And here stood this magnificent play structure that had been done, put together by volunteers. As we found out later, when these people were cutting this treated lumber, they wore
no protection.
No protection, breathing the sawdust.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of guys and ladies weren't even wearing gloves to protect from splinters. And this stuff is really bad. And we'd go out and we'd take pictures of kids playing on it, and then pictures of the same kid at the drinking water fountain, and then a picture of the kid wiping his mouth with his hand after he'd played on. I mean, so the problem with this was, first of all, we were, at least I was severely deceived by the parks director,
mm-hmm.
who really managed to pull the wool over my eyes. I trusted him, and I shouldn't have, but that's another story. But this place had been built by folks who had some political clout. They put together a committee, and you know, it was a big deal at the time. And it was being done all over the country. And there were plaques with names of the people who, you know, promoted this and financed it. And those people did not like it at all. They took it as a personal criticism that these crazy people were saying that their playground was poisonous.
Put up by volunteers.
So I was actually targeted as one of the people who was instrumental in having the thing built, went to the dean in the music school and asked if I was using school computers for my campaign against Eureka Park. And the dean said, well, if he is, that's fine, because he's doing a community service.
Isn't that great? He stood up for
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that stopped that right there. But then I realized these folks, man, they're serious. They're
mm-hmm.
serious. One person in particular who was a former city council member.
Mm-hmm.
But finally, the place was costing so much money to keep in shape. They were spending $36,000 a year just to keep it from falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to the point where they just could not afford, it was
falling apart.
It was just gone. So it was very interesting because all the hoopla about the new park made no mention at all of the previous history of the campaign to take it out because of the arsenic poisoning involved.
They got a new generation of volunteers to put it up, so everything worked out fine.
Yeah.
I need to back up for a minute.
Yeah.
When we did the safety clean thing with the railroad spur, Ed decided to have a meeting about railroad safety. And we actually had the heads of the railroad come here and talk about railroad safety, and they upgraded all of the crossings here.
Yeah.
I mean, we always got positive results every time we complained about something. And so complaining about, you know, the pesticides in the park, that got the IPM thing going. And then that, so we realized, you know, maybe with a little more clout, if you got on city council or ran a campaign, so that was the next step. Ed ran for city council. And in that process, he was able to get out in his argument all the environmental things that were being suppressed. And one of the good things that came out of that campaign, he didn't win, and he's glad he didn't because he had a full-time job, was that the environmental committee was formed.
Environmental management.
Yes.
And sustainability and all that. Previous to this time, water handled some environmental stuff. There was no air monitoring at all. There still isn't, for that matter. But there was not a dedicated environmental management department like most big cities have, or growing cities. It was all spread out. So I one of my platforms was that we need to consolidate all these peoples, because there's communication right now, there is none between the various branches of the city that are involved in supposedly protecting the environment.
So that really kick-started that.
Yeah, that was a great benefit of that. Was worth running for council to get that happening.
So then out of that came the Office of Sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was watching TV one Saturday afternoon, they redid a house in Austin on This Old House, a show called This Old House on PBS. And they put solar panels on that house. And I said, Ed, we could do that here. And this was what, in 2006?
12 years ago.
Yeah. So this was right after you ran and that. And I said, you know, we found out that we have to demonstrate
we have to be examples.
What works. And we were the first people to buy a Prius in the county, the hybrid. And
in the city.
In the county. We bought it from McNatt.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. And we had to order it over the internet through them.
Mm-hmm.
And we would see another Prius on the road after we got ours, and people would honk and wave. You know, it was like, you know, you never saw it. You didn't see them. You just didn't see them. And now they're all over the place. But we got one. And I said, you know, even though it's really expensive, we should put solar panels up. And we did, and we worked with the DME, the Denton Municipal Electric, and it was the very first time they integrated solar panels into the grid. So when they put the meter on our house, they had 7 of their men come out to watch it go backwards when they installed
net
the
metering,
net metering. So all of these things that we've done have been positive, but we had to sometimes demonstrate that there's a better way.
And if I can add something, our putting in the solar panels was responsible for the DME putting in their Green Sense incentive program, their energy conservation, and the wonderful rebates. Now if you put in one
windows
of these,
like this,
you know, it's,
you get money back.
So it all had
just watching This Old House.
Yeah.
That's what did it.
Yeah. So it's
just one little tiny thing.
And as far as I'm concerned, that was the beginning of the road that's led to Denton going to 100% renewable energy.
That's true.
Yeah.
So right now we are using our solar panels for our electricity right now on our house, and anything that we're not using, cuz most of our stuff isn't on now, computers and dishwasher and all that, the energy is going back into the grid, green energy. And so that's what 100% renewable is. It's buying credits. The city buys credits for renewable. So we're greening the grid. And the more people that get off fossil fuels in their home, and convert to electricity will help. So that's the next big campaign,
mm-hmm.
is to get gas out of people's homes, new homes, you know, just have them built with electricity. And go to electric cars. We're getting an electric car in January. We have one on order. We will be completely fossil free then.